Getting Fixed, a novel by Myrna Milani, read by Myrna Milani, all rights reserved. The Making of Getting Fixed. Being a total novice in the book recording realm, there was some information related to the book that I wanted to include, but I didn't know where, so I decided to put it all at the end. The dedication heads the list. Getting Fixed is dedicated to Frank Shepherd, who taught me two things that have served me well over the years. One is that, no matter how much you plan, you can never be totally sure which way a tree or anything else will fall. The second is not to take myself too seriously. The epigram for the book is from Henry Beston's The Outermost House. They are not brethren, they are not lesser, they are other nations caught with us in the net of life and time, fellow prisoners in the splendor and travel of the earth. It's part of Beston's eloquent plea for a better understanding of animals, but it seems to me that it also has meaning relative to those humans we consider lesser for any reason, too. If you read the whole passage, and you can find it in the archive section of my website, you'll realize how spot on he was, and also that we haven't come all that far since he wrote this in 1923. It's this awareness that compels me to write bond-related fiction. If anything, companion animals are becoming such potent symbols in our society that our appreciation for them as members of different species with their own unique physical and behavioral needs isn't that much greater, and for many might actually be even a lot less than it was more than 80 years ago. Even more troubling, and as I discovered as I sought a publisher for my work, there's a general feeling out there that the public doesn't want to know that there are consequences when we relate to any animal, but especially to a companion animal, symbolically. They think that we want to believe that when we get caught up in our own little symbolic worlds like Callie, some guardian angel will swoop down and save the animals when we screw up. But it doesn't work that way. And particularly not now, when our symbolic approach to breeding companion animals has rendered them less and less capable to withstand the stress of our emotional projections. The good news is that, as I know from some of my clients, friends, and colleagues, there are people out there who share my head-over-heels love affair with animal behavior and the human-animal bond. Like me, they realize that you can't really know, let alone love someone, unless you're willing to explore the dark side as well as the light. This book is dedicated to all of them, too. Acknowledging all those who contributed to this book would take hours, but I do want to mention a few. Son Jeremy has been, as usual and like his brother Dan, an absolute saint as I mastered yet another computer-related skill for which my brain was not programmed. How many times I gave him reasons to shout, "Cheese, Mom, for the 10th time, it's under the file menu," or some such thing. But he never did. I'm grateful to my best bud, Ann Firestone, who endured my bouts of recording-related obsessive-compulsive disorder, manic depression, and other mental and emotional deficiencies during this project, and to her husband, Jeff, for letting me use his appropriately named composition, Irritations into Pearls, to introduce and close out each chapter. I'm also grateful to Stephanie Lafarge, Deborah Straw, Anne Lafarge, and Ivor Whitson, professionals whose opinion I highly respect, for believing the book has merit. And finally, I want to thank friend and film buff Pam Bingham for assuming the role of imaginary casting director and providing the perfect fantasy cast for a movie version of Getting Fixed. Frances McDormand as Callie, Aidan Quinn as Joe, and Tom Hanks as Billy. If anyone listening to this happens to know any of them, please feel free to recommend the book. Recording in an old, small, open-concept house shared with three dogs and a cat and a canary poses some unique recording challenges that I'd also like to share. First, we had the jangling rabies and license tags, a sound previously so familiar I never noticed it. How many times I had to re-record something because one of the dogs scratched and jangled. And what is it about putting on a headset that turns the pitter-patter of little pet feet into the thumps of King Kong wearing cement sneakers? Then there were the times Bibi, my deaf corgi, suddenly felt compelled to bark for no reason I could discern, but which never prevented the other two dogs from chiming in, too. Then there was a canine compulsion to locate all the bones they've had in their entire lives, drag them up to the office, and begin gnawing on them with a gusto of a starving wolf pack at a fresh kill as soon as they saw me put the headset on. Not to be outdone, the cat set up such a racket in the living room one day while I was recording, I was sure he was having a seizure. I rushed downstairs from the office to discover him whacking around what I at first thought was a juvenile weasel, but later decided was probably an ermine. Whatever it wasn't very happy, and it made this quite clear by expressing its anal glands. The cat was not happy either, because he knew I wasn't going to allow him to keep his prize. In spite of his, "I'm going to kill you if you take this," growls, I got him to drop his prey without losing any major body parts. The rodent then slid under an antique commode so low to the ground I felt I could easily block its escape with some pillows from the couch until I got my heavy stove gloves on. Wrong. In the few seconds it took me to get the gloves, the slinky devil had disappeared. I told myself it got out the same way it got in, through the dry stone foundation in the basement, and turned my attention to cleaning instead. By the time I finished sniffing every inch of the room and cleaning up anything that smelled the least bit suspicious, and trust me, there are a lot of things that smell suspicious when you share your house with three dogs and a cat, I was in no mood for recording. From then on, the image of some odd critter waiting to spring out and generate chaos was always in my dented head when I recorded. As if all this weren't enough to make me lose my mind, microphones have a way of picking up sounds from very strange places. It took me several days to figure out that I couldn't wear my favorite sweatshirt with a zipper or anything with buttons on the front that the wire from the headset might rub against. Then I went through a period during which, on replay, I could hear a soft noise that was present whether I was recording or not. Worse, sometimes it was there and sometimes it wasn't. I tried turning off the ceiling fan, the light, the aquarium pump, everything I could think of. Still, I couldn't pin it down. Then one day I happened to be editing without using the brain-squishing headset, as usual, and it was sunny, a rare event during the period when I was recording. On this particular day, I deleted the sound, but I could still hear it. I became so frustrated, I turned off the computer, and then I solved the mystery. Duh! The microphone was picking up the canary singing downstairs. Once I realized that, I would record either before the sun came up or on gray, gloomy days when he'd be less likely to sing. Still, I suspect that if you listen very carefully, in some chapters you'll hear the soft echoes of chirping canary that I missed. In closing, I want to take one last opportunity to thank you for listening to the book. Beyond that, all I can say is that from the day I wrote the first word of Getting Fixed to the day I recorded the last, and no matter what happened during all that time, this book was an act of love. You've been listening to an excerpt from Getting Fixed, a novel by Myrna Milani, read by Myrna Milani. For more information about this and other books by the author, please visit mmilani.com. The song Irritations into Pearls was composed and performed by Jeff Firestone. For more information about Jeff and his music, please contact him at retromusic@verizon.net. Thanks for listening.